welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there's more important information coming up, so please keep that pencil and recycled paper handy. We're going to start off the second half of this show with a commentary, and this was written by Hal Burton of the Oregonian staff on February 28th from Roseburg, Oregon. Don Rivard didn't fancy himself a whistleblower. He's a federal biologist whose professional passion is fish and whose personal life revolves around a fundamentalist Christian church. But convinced that federal logging might damage drainages of the endangered cutthroat trout, he didn't hesitate to speak out in memo after memo, meeting after meeting. He clashed with his U.S. Bureau of Land Management bosses over proposals to strip away most of the trees in patches of old-growth forest. Timber sales were scheduled in watersheds already degraded by decades of logging and road building. Then, in August of 1997, Rivard joined the U.S. Forest Service biologist Jeff Doze to commit bureaucratic heresy. The pair went around their Roseburg bosses and their Portland bosses to send a letter to two top regional fishery officials in Seattle. They said the timber sales, contrary to official reports, appear to violate the conservation rules of President Clinton's Northwest Forest Plan and the Federal Endangered Species Act. The Seattle officials, Elizabeth Garr and Will Steele of the National Marine Fisheries Service, dismissed their concerns. But when environmentalists and fishermen took the case to court, a federal judge did not dismiss those concerns. U.S. District Court Judge Barbara Rothstein ruled in September that managers had discounted undisputed evidence that logging would harm small sections of watersheds, and she voided 24 timber sales. The judge's decisions had broad repercussions, possibly ending much of the intensive logging of federal old-growth forests and slashing timber harvests across the 24 million acres of Oregon, Washington, and Northern California covered by the Northwest Forest Plan. The tale of Rivard and others who fought the timber sales reflects a broader tug of war within the BLM and the Forest Service as the agencies struggle to redefine their mission in an era of declining harvests. Interior Secretary Bruce Babbitt and Forest Service Chief Mike Dombeck have repeatedly proclaimed conservation as the central tenet of the new land ethic, but federal officials say the Rothstein ruling would tilt the Northwest Forest Plan too far towards conservation, making it impossible to meet annual timber harvests set out in the plan and possibly blocking road repair and campground improvements that might cause temporary damage to watersheds by increasing silty runoff. The U.S. Justice Department is seeking to overturn the decision in the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, saying timber sales have ample conservation protections to safeguard the fish. As for Rivard, he has yet to earn any kudos for having a judge affirm his concerns. The letter to Seattle landed Rivard with a two-year probation from his bosses, who say he broke Interior Department rules by trying to undermine agency policy. Although his probation ended in December, his work performance remains officially unacceptable. He stands accused by his supervisor of letting bias and personal opinion slip into his reports. He also risks getting fired, according to agency performance reviews obtained by the Oregonian. Rivard filed a whistleblower complaint with the U.S. Office of Special Counsel, claiming that his attempts to keep the BLM from violating federal law led to reprisals from his bosses. Quote, "I'm not proud of what I did, but I don't regret it either," Rivard said. I feel like I did what I had to. Several other biologists, including Jeff Doze and Cindy Barkhurst of the Umpqua National Forest, joined Rivard's battle against the timber sales. Doze told the Oregonian that they felt pressured by superiors to approve timber sales that might damage watersheds already degraded from decades of logging and road building. He eventually got fed up and quit reviewing timber sales, Doze said. Barkhurst said she was forced off the review team of BLM and Forest Service officials. She wants to return to timber sale reviews, adding, "They made me totally ineffective and damaged my professional career." Her supervisor said she was removed from timber sale reviews as part of a normal rotation of personnel. Her bosses praised her zeal but chastised her for insisting on debating issues long after the decisions are made, according to a January 20, 1999 letter from Barkers to Brumley, a natural resources staff officer. The biologist battle in Roseburg over logging unfolded in a town that's long been a hub of the Oregon timber industry. For decades, Bureau of Land Management and Forest Service officials devoted most of their staff and budgets to preparing old-growth timber sales to supply local logging mills. Logging reached record highs in the mid-1980s, then crashed as environmental activists gained court injunctions to protect the northern spotted owl and old-growth forests. The Northwest Forest Plan, approved in federal court, broke the gridlock, increasing conservation measures but still allowing timber harvests projected at about 20% of the peak federal harvest years of the mid-1980s. Rivard arrived in Roseburg in 1995, new to logging. He'd grown up up in suburban Detroit and spent much of his career working on overseas development projects and in fisheries jobs in the Southwest and California. He was assigned to a team that reviewed timber sales to see whether they complied with watershed protection rules known as Aquatic Conservation Strategy of the Northwest Forest Plan. If the sales passed muster, they would also be deemed safe enough for the Umpqua cutthroat protected under the Endangered Species Act. Brevard, along with Doe's and Barkhurst, was disturbed by many of the sales. Some were scheduled in watersheds already degraded by logging and road building. Under the conservation rules of the plan, the agencies are supposed to focus on restoring those watersheds, and no activity in those watersheds is supposed to set back the restoration. Yet the BLM proposed something called regeneration harvest, which leave as few as 6 to 8 trees per acre in clear-cut style logging. The sales risk further harm by increasing erosion, affecting runoff, and removing trees whose shade might have helped cool water pools for cutthroat trout, according to agency documents the team reviewed. The three biologists thought the sales would violate the conservation rules. Rather than clear-cut in those areas, they proposed more selective harvests or in some degraded zones postponing logging for several decades. Supervisors who often sat in on team meetings were dismayed by the recommendations. Plans call for more than 70% of the Bureau of Land Management timber volume and at least a 60% of the annual forest timber volume to come from regeneration harvests. If that type of logging would be deemed unacceptable, then our basic assumptions regarding potential sale quantity estimates for the area are seriously flawed, wrote Don Ostaby, supervisor of the Umpqua National Forest Service, in a November 4, 1997 agency memorandum. These are fundamental public policy issues that should be discussed and resolved at the highest level. They were resolved in favor of clear-cut-style harvest. BLM and Forest Service officials agreed the sales could take place even if the logging damaged small sections of the stream, according to BLM memorandums. The key, they said, would be for logging to cause no long-term damage that could be measured over an entire watershed. Moreover, they said, the effects of logging could sometimes be counterbalanced by adding to the sale packages restoration projects, such as removing erosion-prone roads. The National Marine Fisheries Service, charged with enforcing the Endangered Species Act, then signed off on the sales. But Brevard, Doe's, and Barkhurst questioned that policy and kept fighting. No matter what we said, we were always rebutted by our bosses, Doe's said. In August 1997, the frustrated Doe's drafted the letter to the Seattle fishery officials. Brevard carefully read the two-page text. He co-signed the final copy, which included a warning that decisions were made in an, quote, atmosphere of distrust and intimidation. That letter and numerous other memorandums and reports from the biologists ended up as evidence in the lawsuit that environmentalists and fishermen's groups filed to halt the sales. The lawsuit was a big victory for the plaintiffs. Rothstein blasted agency policies that allowed the regeneration harvest. By looking only at long-term effects of an entire watershed, the agencies, quote, virtually guaranteed that no timber sale would ever be found to jeopardize the continued existence of the Oregon coastal coho or the Umpqua River cutthroat trout, Rothstein wrote, the judge in the case. Moreover, she said the agencies ignored the best science information available in developing a policy that, quote, not rationally calculated to achieve the conservation goals of the Northwest Forest Plan. 5 months after the decision, federal officials are struggling to figure out how to proceed under the new rules Rothstein has set down. They defend the sales as well-designed harvests with state-of-the-art conservation protection, ho-hum. But while waiting for a decision from the Court of Appeals, they've had to cut back this year's harvest. BLM's Roseburg District hoped to sell 45 million board feet of timber in the fiscal year ending September 30th. It now expects to sell only 15 million board feet during the current fiscal year, said Don Hicks, a BLM district forester in Roseburg. Brevard still works in the Roseburg District, but he's not allowed near a timber sale plan. He isn't sure what the future holds. In his whistleblower complaint, he asked to be returned to the team and to gain an apology from the agency. By the way, he's also looking for a new job. You can reach the Environmental and Natural Resources team. Their phone number is 503-294-5122. That's 503-294-5122. Or you can send email to environment@news.oregonian.com. That's environment@news.oregonian.com. And I want to thank Hal Burnton of the Oregonian staff for this commentary. And Bruce Babbitt has released the draft Yosemite Valley Management Plan. In a lunch at the Commonwealth Club on March 27th, Secretary of Interior Bruce Babbitt unveiled a draft environmental impact statement and plan for Yosemite Valley. The plan would remove about 1,000 parking spaces from the valley and hopefully reduce traffic by 60%. Mr. Babbitt was clear that no new parking facilities would be constructed in the valley. And the North Side Road would be turned into a bike and hiking trail, and three bridges would be removed, as well as the Cascades Diversion Dam. And there would be some campgrounds would also be removed. There will be hearings on the plan. I don't have locations for the hearings exactly, but starting on May 22nd in San Francisco, May 23rd in Sacramento, through June 17th in the South Bay here. The comment period starts tomorrow, that's April 7th, and runs through July 5th, and there will be no extensions under any circumstances, according to Mr. Babbitt. Comments must be postmarked by July 5th, okay? You may obtain a copy of the plan or submit comments to Yosemite Valley Plan /SEIS, P.O. Box 577, Yosemite National Park, California 95839. Once again, that's Yosemite Valley Plan /SEIS, P.O. Box 577, Yosemite National Park, California 95839. You can also go online to the National Park Service's website. That's www.nps.gov/yose/planning.htm. Once again, that webpage, www.nps.gov/yose/planning.htm. The comments will be received for 90 days. Let's see here. Not everyone is happy with the National Park Service's new plan for Yosemite National Park. Greg Adair, spokesman for Friends of Yosemite Valley, said, quote, "Every indication is that restoration and public concern for a more natural Yosemite are being pushed aside to clear the way for expanding hotel and commercial development, widening roadways, and vast new parking areas throughout the park." Friends of Yosemite Valley sued the National Park Service in 1998 to stop the expansion of the Yosemite Lodge in the valley and worked with others to challenge a road widening project, which ended in a court-ordered management plan for the Merced River. That plan comment period ended March 24th. "The outrageous thing is that Interior Secretary Bruce Babbitt's valley plan was finished and printed before public comment on restoring the valley and the Merced River were even considered," said Adair. "The Clinton-Gore administration remains concerned with the restoration of concession profits, not the valley. No amount of spin can cover this." Friends of Yosemite Valley says about half of the valley's campsites would disappear in favor of upscale hotel lodging, additional restaurant space, road expansion, a diesel bus system, and other profitable concessions would be added under the plan, the group charges. Environmental leader David Brower, who attended the event announcing the plan, said Yosemite should be a nature center, not a profit center. "And your urgent help is needed to stop the Forest Service from poisoning the Salmon River. Don't let the Forest Service open the door to a massive herbicide spraying program that was slammed shut almost 20 years ago by the overwhelming involvement of local communities led by the Salmon River Concerned Citizens and others. It was learned the Siskiyou County Department of Agriculture has been secretly spraying without any notice to the public or the federal government. Your letters are needed immediately. The Salmon River Community Noxious Program, also chemical-free, is a strong working model which, if allowed to continue, will be positive in reinforcement that chemicals are not the only or the best way, and that community and public involvement is one of the most effective tools. Please write to the National Marine and Fisheries Service, 1330 Bayshore Way, Eureka, California, 95501. That's National Marine Fisheries Service, 1330 Bayshore Way, Eureka, California, 95501. Or you can write to the Acting Ranger, Salmon River Ranger District, United States Forest Service. Here's the street address, 11263 North Highway 3, Fort Jones, California, 96032. That address, once again, Acting Ranger, Salmon River Ranger District, U.S. Forest Service, 11263 North Highway 3, Fort Jones, California, 96032. Or you could call 530-468-5351. That's 530-468-5351. And if you want more information, contact the Salmon River Concerned Citizens, P.O. Box 610, Forks of Salmon, California, 96031. That's Salmon River Concerned Citizens, Box 610, Forks of Salmon, California, 96031. And the Clinton administration, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the Corps of Engineers are attempting to weaken the Clean Water Act by redefining what constitutes fill material, within the Section 404 of the Clean Water Act by changing the definition. The administration is essentially allowing for a mountaintop waste. This is caused by blowing up of the tops of mountains to be dumped into streams. In West Virginia alone, over 400 miles of streams have already been filled in by mountaintop waste. Last year, a judge in West Virginia ruled against coal companies, stating that under the Clean Water Act, mountaintop waste could not be dumped into streams. The administration is trying to get around this issue by changing the Clean Water Act. Calls are needed to the Council on Environmental Quality. Please contact George Frampton, Council of Environmental Quality. His number, 202-456-6224. That's 202-456-6224. Or fax to 456-2710. If you'd like more information, you can send email to Citizens Coal Council. Their email address, ccc@net1.com. That's ccc@netone.com. The U.S. Air Force is moving ahead with plans for a huge commercial airport at the edge of the Florida Everglades, despite studies showing the airport could cause serious harm to the Everglades and the Biscayne National Parks. If allowed, the Homestead Airport would be the closest major commercial airport to a national park within the United States, sitting a mile and a half from Biscayne National Park, 8.5 miles from Everglades National Park, and 10 miles from the Florida Keys National Marine Sanctuary. The proposed airport would host more than 230,000 flights per year. That's an average of one plane every minute during daylight hours, flying at low altitudes over both parks and the sanctuary. Environmental impacts of the airport include the emission of 7 tons of toxic pollutants into the air, pollution of the Biscayne Bay, damage to coral reefs, loss of wildlife habitat from nearby development. And last year, the Environmental Protection Agency itself concluded that the Homestead Air Reserve Base's stormwater discharge canal, which leads into Biscayne Bay, is significantly contaminated with heavy metals and radioactive contaminants. Environmental cleanup of the airbase has already cost taxpayers more than $50 million, and the cost is going up. Contact President Clinton. Tell him that no national park will be safe if the project goes forward. Once again, the phone number, 202-456-1111. That's 202-456-1111 for the president, or, of course, email to president@whitehouse.gov. Tell him to stop the Homestead Air Reserve Base. Timber industry spokesmen have long claimed that logging is the best way to prevent disastrous forest fires. They argue that the Great Yellowstone National Park fire demonstrated the fallacy of prohibiting timber management in wilderness areas. But ecologists have responded that fire severity was caused by years of fire suppression. This allowed an unnatural buildup of fuel, fallen trees, limbs, and leaves. In nature undisturbed, lightning-caused fires were frequent and burned slowly along the forest floor, not killing trees. The swift recovery of the Yellowstone Forest confirms their stance. Even the Forest Service has revised its policy of all-out fire suppression. And now Chad Hansen of the John Muir Project has assembled compelling evidence that logging causes catastrophic fires. Let's get into some climate news here. As the seas rise, the glaciers disappear. We are major users of fossil fuels, and we are condemning the continents to ruin. Between Greenland and the Faroe Islands, there is an undersea waterfall 30 times the size of the River Amazon. The water cascades over a submarine ridge, then rumbles down to the ocean floor all the way to the Cape of Good Hope. This current is a result of the high salt content of the surface of the North Atlantic. The salty water being denser than the water underneath sinks and starts to travel. The global circulation system this flow initiates ensures that warm water travels back from the Caribbean to Western Europe. Were the North Atlantic to become less salty, in other words, the currents keeping Europe warm could slacken. 8,500 years ago, an ice shelf damming two vast glacial lakes in North America exploded. The lake water rushed through the Hudson Strait, mingling with the salty waters of the Atlantic. The result was a 200-year ice age during which humans became extinct in northern Europe. In Greenland today, just to the north of the Great Atlantic Waterfall, scores of glaciers and ice dam fjords are beginning to melt. Over the past 20 years, an area of Arctic sea ice the size of Texas has disappeared. As the ice retreats, the pole becomes darker, absorbing more heat and accelerating the melting. The North Atlantic could become significantly wetter. It is not clear what the results will be. Dilution of the ocean is most likely merely to slow the warming of Western Europe, but there remains a possibility that it could cause a sudden drop in temperature so severe that Britain could once more become uninhabitable. Oh boy, this goes on for a couple of pages, but you get the drift, right? Well, let's go on. In the 1990s, recorded as the warmest decade on record. Ice sheets and glaciers are melting at an alarming rate, reports in a leading environmental group. World Watch Institute has compiled records from across the globe that shows ice melts have accelerated during the 1990s. Although there is much dispute in the scientific community whether the Earth is gradually warming because of human activity or whether the increases are just variations in global temperature, the World Watch report lists some examples of thinning ice, which include Arctic Ocean sea ice shrunk by 6% since 1978, with 14% loss of thicker year-round ice. The ice has thinned 40% in under 30 years. The Greenland ice sheet, that's thinned by more than a meter a year on its southern and eastern edges since 1993. Antarctic sea ice, ice to the west of the Antarctic Peninsula, shrank by 20% between 1973 and 1993, and the decline continues. In the Tian Shan Mountains, Central Asia, 22% of glacial ice volume has disappeared in the last 40 years. And the Cuelcaya Glacier in the Peruvian Andes has retreated 3 meters a year. That's about 10 feet in the 1970s, has increased to 30 meters, more like 100 feet a year in the 1990s. According to the article, scientists agree that Antarctica's land ice is melting. However, there is disagreement concerning how quickly. The Earth's ice cover reflects much of the sun's heat back into space. World Watch says a loss of ice cover would affect global climate, raise sea levels, and threaten water supplies. World Watch went on to say that the water exposed by the retreating ice would retain heat and speed up the warming process. The report also says that melting ice in the Arctic could release enough fresh water to disrupt the Gulf Stream that warms northwestern Europe. We already read that article. And World Watch also warns of the effects that melting ice could have on wildlife in northern Canada. Reports of hunger and weight loss in wildlife have been associated with ice cover changes. In addition, sea ice loss and rising temperatures are altering the habitats and feeding and breeding patterns of seals and penguins. And the winter of 1999-2000 was the warmest winter on the United States since government began keeping records 105 years ago, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. This marked the third year in a row that record warmth has been recorded in the United States during the winter months. And the average U.S. temperature from December to February was 38.4 degrees Fahrenheit, 6/10 of a degree warmer than the previous record set last year. It's also the 16th driest winter on average. And the government blamed the warmer temperatures and lack of moisture on La Nina, a weather phenomenon. Well, that's about all the time we have for news right now. To get your news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzef@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or send your letters to Earth First Radio. We're at P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, that's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Be sure to please send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. And if you want more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their address is P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. Once again, that's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. You can now listen to Earth First Radio on your computer at the World Wide Web. We're at www.radioforall.net. That's www.radio4all.net. You'll need a sound card in your computer, but the software you need to play the MP3 files is free on the website. And Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. And we're now carried live on streaming audio from Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3. You can get to us by going to www.cruzio.com. That's www.cruzio.com, and stroll on down to the radio area where you will find FRSC, and you can listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz live. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening to Earth First Radio, and now we're going to listen to some Walkin' Jim Stoltz.
A butterfly, she's so neat, with her fancy wings and her dainty feet. Oh, she flutters here and there, just like a queen. And if you saw her there, you know what I mean. No one can replace her, no, 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 no. She's the most special creature flying under the sun. But then you think about the food chain, and along comes a hungry crow. Chomp, 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 gobble, 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 gulp, 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 she's gone. For the little fawn, she is so cute, with her Bambi eyes and her spotted suit. Oh, she prances through the meadow without a care, chasing butterflies all through the air. No one can replace her, no, no, none. She's the most special creature prancing under the sun. But then you think about the food chain, and along comes a hungry cow. Chomp, 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 gobble, 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 gulp, 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 she's gone. Man, you can tell by his tan, he's carrying everything at his back and stand. He's a walking page out of L.L. Bean. If you saw him in the woods, you know what I mean. No one can replace him, no, 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 no. He's the most special man, cause he carries a gun. But then you think about the food chain, and along comes a hungry grizz. Chomp, 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 gobble, 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 gulp, 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 he's gone. Fat or skinny, short or tall, you don't have to worry at all. You don't have to be dressed in style to get a taste or be tased by the wild. Just think about the food chain, and along comes something bigger. Chomp, 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 gobble, 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 gulp, 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 you're gone. I said a chomp, 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 gobble, 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 gulp, 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 you're gone.